WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Tenor saxophonist Stan Getz has enjoyed popularity in both the worlds of jazz and pop. In the 1950s and 60s, he was a perennial poll winner in the jazz magazines. In 1962 and 64, he landed in the top 40 with his bossa nova hits Desafinado and Girl from Ipanema, which started the Brazilian music craze in the United States. Getz has won 11 Grammys during his career. Jazz critic Francis Davis once paraphrased F. Scott Fitzgerald to describe Getz. Davis wrote, "There's something gorgeous about Getz, some heightened sensitivity to life, such as one rarely perceives in jazz." Stan Getz has a new album called Appassionato. This is a composition called Coba. Tell me how you came about doing this new record, Appassionato, and how Herb Alpert ended up producing it. I know he's the head of the record company that it's on.
Well, actually, that's the reason that I ended up doing it and he producing, because I'd never known of his capabilities as a producer. I'd never met the man. All I knew him from was the Tijuana Brass way back.
Mm-hmm.
And when he wanted to sign me to the company, he said, "I want to produce the record, so what do you say?" He owns the company. I said, "Fine." But as we went ahead and did the record, it turned out that he's just one of the most complete persons in a studio you'll ever want to meet. He just, I was amazed watching him work with this record, and I'm glad he produced it. He did a great job.
For the past few years, you've been teaching at Stanford, right?
Yeah.
Kind of musician in residence.
Artist in residence.
Describe your teaching style.
Oh, I don't have a teaching style. I never taught before. I never studied music myself.
Yeah.
All I did was listen to them play and talk with them and play with them, and hoping some of it would rub off. And I did end up with some very fine pupils.
So you never had a music teacher yourself? You never took lessons?
No. I took a few saxophone lessons in the beginning, but that's about all. I went on the road when I was 15, and everything I've learned has been in what you might call the traveling academies.
Yeah, right. Who showed you the most when you were young and on the road?
I think the very first band leader, Jack Teagarden. He was an amazing, wonderful musician. And Benny Goodman. And then Woody Herman's band. We had a great band. I was about, 19, 20 years old, and I learned a lot on that band. And ever since then, I've had my own band.
You know, when you were on the road with Teagarden, I think you were 16 years old, and if I have the story straight, you had dropped out of high school, and a truant officer tracked you down on the road with Teagarden's band, and then Teagarden ended up becoming your legal guardian for a while so that you could stay on the road and not go back to high school?
That's right.
How did the truant officer find you?
Oh, I don't know, but I guess I never thought of that. I don't know how he found me. I went to school in New York. He found me in St. Louis. But he found me, and Teagarden had a promise that he would make sure I got my lessons. And I sure did, but I don't know if it's the kind of lessons that the truant officer meant for me to have.
Right. Was Teagarden reluctant to take you on, you know, him being the guardian, or was he just like pressured into this? Was it a big pain for him?
No, he sort of believed in me and he liked me. And also, don't forget, there was a war going on. I was too young to serve. And it seems that all the good musicians were taken. There was nothing left to choose from but overage, underage, and physically disabled. So I guess he was sort of happy to have me on band and not be taken away and put in service.
How did tenor saxophone become your instrument?
actually, it was alto first, and mm-hmm. before that, harmonica and bass. That's all my father could afford to buy me was a saxophone.
You mean as opposed to a piano or something?
Yeah, I wanted a piano, but he saved up his lunch money for a year when we lived in the Bronx and bought me a little silver turning green alto saxophone. And I got involved with the saxophone, and that was it, I guess.
When you were young and on the road with different bands, were you ever criticized for your tone or your phrasing? What I'm thinking of, for instance, is like when Lester Young started playing, there were always stories that when Lester Young started playing, he was criticized for not sounding enough like Coleman Hawkins. His sound wasn't the way a tenor was supposed to sound. Did you run into anything like that?
I never gave anybody a chance to criticize me because I was always asking. I got so enthralled with the beauty of music, I wanted to become a good musician. So I was right there, open for any criticism that anybody wanted to give. And I still am that way. It's always a learning process. That's why I'm not bored with it after 50 years at it.
Mm-hmm. How did you end up joining Woody Herman's band?
I had left Benny Goodman's band and was out on the coast, and we put together a little three tenor band in the L.A. area, and Woody heard about it. In the band were Zoot Sims and Herbie Stewart and Jimmy Giuffre and myself, and Woody heard about us and hired us en masse to go with the second herd he was forming after he'd disbanded the first.
The saxophone section became known as the Four Brothers.
Correct. Well, it wasn't originally titled The Four Brothers. It was titled The Four Mothers.
Oh, really? Got it.
But we couldn't use it that way at the time, so it became Brothers. But now you could say Four Mothers.
Uh-huh. Well, what was it like for you being in such a great section? You know, I don't know how many bands have such a good horn section.
It was a great band. I mean, it's been one thrill after another in this business with the musicians I've played with and the places I've been. Keeps you young.
Stan Getz is my guest, and he has a new album out on A&M Records called Appassionato. It was in the early 1950s, I think, that you went out on your own, started your own band. Was it a big responsibility when you were younger to have bands on your own and have to worry about, you know, paying the musicians in the bands when you were on gigs and stuff like that?
It was. I was totally unprepared and ill-equipped for it. But because I had a chance to play with whom I wanted to in the rhythm section, in rhythm sections, and to play the music I wanted to exactly as the way I wanted to, it was a great thrill. So the lack of money meant nothing. We just made it somehow, and we kept going on and on.
Let me play one of your early recordings with your own group. This is a 1952 session of Body and Soul. And playing with you is Duke Jordan at the piano, Jimmy Rainey guitar, Bill Crow bass, and Frank Asola drums. This is Body and Soul, recorded in 1952. Body and Soul, my guest Stan Getz on tenor saxophone. Do you have good memories of this session?
Yeah, I do. It was my first session for the Verve label. First time I met Norman Granz, and that started a 20-year relationship with the Verve, which was bought by Polygram, and now they still put it out under the Verve name. I have 80 records on that label, and they're starting to reissue many of them on CD now, and they're doing tremendously well.
You've always shown on ballads. Do you feel like you've always gravitated to ballads?
Not really. I believe a set of music, when you present music, should have all different tempos. Naturally, you have to have a ballad. Just when I brought bossa nova into our music, I believe a set should have a bossa nova because the change of pace is always nice. I play ballads because they should be played. I love ballads. I'm a very romantic old soul. And I think it's more difficult to play ballads than fast tunes. Fast tunes sometimes can end up to be a display of technique, whereas ballads are... you have to have a little more finesse.
But, you know, when you were out on your own in the early 1950s, a lot of the musicians were playing bop, and I think often in bop there was a real premium put on playing the fast riff. And I was wondering if you felt part of that at all, and if you felt that the ballads were often underappreciated.
I love bop. I still love it. It's a great advancement in music. But then there's always a backlash to any style of music that comes out. And it's usually the opposite of what's out at the moment. And that's how the school of playing cool, the cool school, came into being, was the backlash from the frenetic approach of bebop. And out of all that came... the cool school.
A lot of musicians in the 1950s ended up getting hooked on heroin. And from what I've heard, one of the things I've heard from a lot of musicians is that they saw the musicians they looked up to doing drugs and ended up doing them themselves, and partially in an attempt to emulate their heroes, and also thinking that maybe they'd sound better. And I know you had a drug problem in your teens and in part of your 20s. And I was wondering how you got involved with that.
You know, I think as I look back on it, that musicians use drugs and alcohol for two reasons. One of the reasons is the same reason as why doctors have used morphine. Because when you get tired, morphine is a work drug. As long as you don't take too much of it, it'll keep you going. Alcohol is a temporary stimulant before it's a depressant. I think that was one reason, because we traveled and worked very hard, and it was there. I didn't look to any idols as the reason why I would take drugs so it would make me play better. That's nonsense. The other reason is that... there's a state of mind that you need to do anything in the art forms. It's called the alpha state. Delta is pure sleep. That's another state, brain waves. And there's delta, there's theta, which is meditation. And alpha is the one state of mind that you do to go into creating something. It's sort of like thinking off the top of your head, relaxed concentration. And when you can't get that naturally, if you're too tired or something, you might resort to alcohol, drugs, to chocolate, to food, anything that will give you a chance to get into alpha, to relax and think, but not really think like, say, an accountant would think, but think in the artistic sense of the word. That's the reason I use stuff.
You ended up in prison for a while. How were you busted?
I had needle marks on my arm, which is a law that since has been declared unconstitutional. It was a misdemeanor, first offense, but it seems that the judge's son had gotten into the same trouble, and he was angry, and he... gave me 180 days hard time, first offense on a misdemeanor, and 3 years probation. So, all for the best, I think. No pain, no gain in this life.
So you were in prison just for having needle marks?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of prison were you in?
The L.A. holding jail, L.A. County Jail. That's the kind of jail where it's not an institution. It's where people who can't make bail rot in the cell.
Is that what you felt you were doing, is rotting in the cell?
Of course I was. That's what we were all doing, and it was an overcrowded jail.
Did you have to kick in jail?
Yeah.
What'd you do when you got out?
What I do, I played and was very happy. I played music. 4 days after I got out, after not touching my horn, they took it away in jail. I played a concert at the Shrine Auditorium for 7,000 people.
You were the musician in the 60s most responsible for popularizing Brazilian music in the United States, especially, you know, your albums with Wild Gilberto and work with Carlos Jobim. The biggest hit, I think, was Girl from Ipanema. What got you interested in Brazilian music?
The beauty of it.
Had you traveled down there?
Never been to Brazil when I made those records. A lot of people think I'm Brazilian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm from North Brazil, the Bronx. No, it's just beautiful music with very, very suggestive, laid-back rhythms, and the melodies are beautiful and sad and romantic. It's a folk music. All folk music is beautiful. And it goes perfectly with jazz. So, there you are.
Let me play what was probably your biggest bossa nova hit, The Girl from Ipanema, probably the single record that had the biggest effect on Americans in the 60s in terms of Brazilian music. Stan Getz and his version of Girl from Ipanema. Now, when you ended up on the pop charts, were you surprised?
Oh, was I ever. I recorded the music because I thought it was beautiful, and here it turns out to be commercially very viable. And I was amazed. Same with this Apassionado was done out of a labor of love. It just hit the charts, first week on the charts, at number 12 with a bullet.
Oh, really?
Going up.
How do you think your sound has changed over the years?
It's gotten gutsier. It's more direct. It isn't as pretty. It's not as feminine.
What do you mean by feminine?
Oh, sort of light, airy, effeminate. It has more substance, and it's more direct.
How did you start playing in the upper register a lot?
I think I played the lead tenor part with Woody Herman's band.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was up above everybody else, and I sort of got used to it. And I think then when I got a quartet, too, we used to play in noisy clubs, people drinking, and I'd have to play in the upper register, it seems, to be heard as a lead voice over a rhythm section. And then again, maybe I just like it. I don't play nearly as much in the upper register as I used to.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Stan Getz. Most of your life you've been on and off the road, touring, traveling. How do you like life on the road?
Physically and emotionally, it can be wearing. But there's one thing that makes it all worthwhile, and that's that you do get up to play music in different towns for different people. So all the inconvenience you put up with is canceled out by that one main thing, the reason why you're there.
Mm-hmm. You have a family. You have married.
Well, they're
all
grown
children.
Now.
Yeah, but when you were younger, was it hard to leave the family and go on your
own? Oh, my family life probably suffered from it, I'm sure. What could I do? It seems my life has been music. And the constant search for it is in some ways been the mainspring of my life. What can I do? Kids seem all right now. I love them, and they seem to love me.
Mm-hmm. I know a couple of years ago you had a malignant tumor in the back of your heart, and you had surgery and seemed to recover from that fine. How is your health now?
It's pretty good. I still have cancer, and I have liver cancer, and I'm holding it at bay. I was supposed to have been dead a year and a half ago. But by taking these Chinese herbs and having acupuncture and moxibustion and eating a macrobiotic diet, I'm holding my own. And things going good. And I think playing music's going to keep me alive. I love to play music.
What led you to Chinese herbs and acupuncture as opposed to, the more medicinal approach?
The conventional Western medicine
approach.
Thank
you. That's the word I'm looking for. Thank you.
Well, what turned me towards the alternative therapies was the fact that I did have the operation to remove this tumor from behind my heart. And a few months after it was done, it was growing back. And then I researched a lot, and I saw that chemo is poisoning. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And radiation is burning. And somehow I was led to these natural approaches, and it seems to keep me from buying the farm.
So do you have to get blood tests a lot and see how things are going?
Every 3 months I have it measured in what they call a magnetic resonance imaging. It's a very sophisticated form of looking inside you.
Is that the worst part when you're waiting for the test results?
No, I'm not worried. Every day is a bonus. I've led a full life. I really am not worried about getting a negative report. What happens, but I certainly am going to go out kicking. And my way was fighting back with these therapies that I use. And I've helped some other people too that have tried using them by letting them know about it.
Has this affected your repertoire at all? The tunes that you feel like playing when you're performing?
No, I play whatever I want to, but it does affect the length of a performance. My stamina isn't what it should be, what it used to be. Musical stamina.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish you good health, and I thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. It was nice to talk to you. You're very bright with your questions.
Stan Getz. His latest recording is Appassionato.